7 minutes after 1 o'clock, as we head into the 1 o'clock hour of the first day of July. Yeah. It's now July. We are officially in some air. Of course, we are officially in the 21st, but, you know, hey, June splits the summer with the spring, so you can't really say it's a summer month, you know. I can, but, you know, I mean, in the old world, we'd be midsummer, but now it's the first full summer month. And then we have all of July, all of August, strangely enough, all of September, which kind of seems odd, doesn't it? I always thought September. Does that feel like a summer month to you? September? No. September is not a summer month. Oh, well, go figure. By the way, this is the seventh month, except September is the seventh month in the Roman calendar. That's why it's called September. October is the eighth month. Eight. You get the idea. November 9, December 10, Deca. Somebody screwed everything up. Who's messing with a calendar around here? We can't figure out if we're worshiping pagan gods or counting in Latin. Vest, Ranger, the way we count time. Coming up at 4 o'clock, J.T. Caldwell, the chaplain's assistant. He says, one out of three returning soldiers are needful and desperate need of mental health treatment. We have screwed these kids up so bad, they may never, ever recover mentally. You know, it's bad enough where they're coming back so badly maimed, you know, that they may never be able to function physically. But mentally, you know, multiply that by eight. Whacked. So badly whacked. You know, when my generation went to Southeast Asia, went to Vietnam, we came back. You know, in the First World War, it was shell shock. Okay? I can't remember what they called it in the Second War, but by the time it hit Vietnam, it was called post-traumatic stress disorder. We have now, in the Iraq War, reached a level that has, I don't even know, if it's PTSD squared. A whole nother level. So we're going to talk about that with J.T. Caldwell coming up at 4 o'clock. And at the top of the show, Dr. Davis Liu, Heart Health. You've doubtless noted lately two very famous people, right out of the blue, had heart attacks. Tim Russert, George Carlin. Who knew? Just boom. And they're doing dirt naps just that quick. And you're wondering, is this something we should be paying attention to? And my guest is going to say, yeah, especially if you're in that generation, which, by the way, we are. Tim Russell was what, 58? Now, granted, George Carlin was 71, but, you know, he never looked like he was 71. He looked like he was going to live forever. But just to name two examples, and heart health for our generation may be our big undoing. Next to obesity, we may all just grab our chest one day, and soon perhaps, and just do a faceplant, just like that, boom, just like that. So we're going to talk about that with my guest Davis Liu momentarily. But first off, all right, all you Cancerians out there, you nurturing, emotional, sensitive, conservative, home-loving moon children, born on this date in 1804, his/her novels were written under a male pseudonym. George Sand was not a guy. That's it, battle fatigue, yeah. George Sand's real name was Amandine Aurore Lucille Baronne Dudevant, French novelist of romantic movement whose irregular life and many love affairs shocked. Are you ready for this? Parisian society. Is that possible? Yeah. Mr. Sand, that is Madame Dudevant, was born in Paris July the 1st of 1804, the daughter of a French army officer named Dupin, who was descended from King Augustus II of Poland. And most of her childhood was spent in the country at Nohant in Berry, except for a convent education in Paris, married Casimir Dudevant, a country squire, in 1822, but soon became bored and left her husband, moved back to Paris, joined a group of distinguished artists that included the French novelist Honoré de Balzac, Hungarian composer Franz Liszt, became celebrated both for her writings and for her, shall we say, romantic liaison. Shocked Parisian society. Look, if you can shock the Parisians, that's pretty good. What a girl she must have been. Gerald Edelman, born in the state. Biochemist, neuroscientist, born in 1929. Princess Diana. Diana, Princess of Wales, was born in the state in 1961. Charlie Lawton, the actor and director, was born on this date in 1899. And Carl Lewis, track and field athlete and star, born in 1961. And on this date, in 1863, the Union Army took heavy losses on the first day of the Battle of Gettysburg, considered the pivotal battle. Some say the last great battle of the American Civil War. And on this date in 1898, Teddy Roosevelt, bully, led the troops of volunteers known as the Rough Riders in their charge in San Juan Hill in Cuba, beginning of the Spanish-American War. Some say that it wasn't all that it was cracked up to be, but hey. Yeah, Teddy Roosevelt knew how to get a headline. That's okay with me. Well, for those of you out there who are, if you are older than 58 years old, pay attention. Because after Tim Russert unexpectedly just grabbed his chest right there at his desk and fell down dead, as did, well, George Carlin got chest pains and later on that evening died. Suddenly everybody's paying attention to heart health and what it is we should be paying attention to, including, by the way, not only how we work, how we live, how we eat, how we exercise, what we take, the drugs, the tests, all of that. Dr. Davis Liu, good morning.
Good morning.
And thanks so kindly for being with.
No problem.
Tim Russert, like a lot of people in my business, he was one of my kind of my heroes. And I, when I heard the story, it was, not to put it mildly, a shock. And then George Carlin a few days later. But this was kind of, again, kind of surprising because neither one of these two had any indications that they may have been suffering from any kind of heart disease. And yet it turns out that heart disease not only is lurking, just waiting one of these days to grab you, it's also supposed to be the number one killer of women in America. Is that true?
It's been true for both genders, actually. It's just that the press and media are enamored more with breast cancer. But actually, heart disease kills twice as many women annually than cancer does. So in both men and women, heart disease has been number one for quite a period of time.
Yeah, and it seems to be, now we know about stroke, which is a silent killer. Diabetes also, and high blood pressure is a silent killer. But heart disease, we don't hear much about it. And then we hear about our friends literally clutching their chest and hitting the floor.
Yeah, actually, I was just to clarify, I was listening to you earlier. George Carlin actually had congestive heart failure, which is a weakened heart. And, you know, that's probably a result of heart disease for over a period of years or high blood pressure. But in both cases, you're right. It seems like the public's awareness has gone up for a disease that actually still hasn't been stamped out for most in part.
Well, and why is it that first of all, we don't know as much as we should know, and secondary, why is it that it lurks so close to our mortality?
Well, I think the big question is are we doing everything right to prevent premature death from heart disease? I mean, I was just as shocked as anybody else when I heard Tim Russert pass away unexpectedly. He looked so young. He still is young. You know, 58, still young these days.
58, yeah.
58, still young. And the question I had posed was thinking is, did he get everything done? In other words, did he take aspirin every day? Mm. Was his blood pressure controlled to the recommended guidelines? Was his cholesterol controlled? We actually know in this country that twice as many people die of missed opportunities, missing the right medications, getting the right cholesterol. Twice as many people died annually last year than women who died of breast cancer because of these missed opportunities. And frankly, all these people have health insurance. So the real question you should be asking, are we doing everything possible to keep ourselves healthy and well? For Tim Russert, I don't know. I don't have the actual input to that. From the stuff I've seen so far, it seems like he had everything right. And sometimes, like getting into a car accident, doesn't matter how safe your car is, if your time is your time, it's your time.
Well, that doesn't help, though, when, you know, suddenly we think we're doing everything. We look good, you know, we look like we're healthy, we look like we're alive, we look like we're pink, and then find out that it ain't necessarily so. I mean, what is it we should be looking for? What are we doing wrong?
Well, again, it goes back to the question, are we doing everything right? They've done studies that showed, for example, patients with heart disease. So these are patients who've survived a heart attack. In Massachusetts, for example, 100% of them got aspirin, which every medical student will tell you is the standard of care. Yet if you live in Mississippi and you had the same heart disease, only half of the patients got aspirin. And why is that? Because the doctors weren't reminding them. I mean, people are busy. People are busy. And, you know, are you doing everything possible? So like you said, you might feel good. You might be doing the right things, or at least you're thinking you're doing the right things. But in fact, I think our healthcare system fails a lot of times. And so the question is, do people have the knowledge to stay healthy and well, or do you have to seek that knowledge out?
All right.
That's pretty harder.
All right. Let me ask you a question. I have a friend of mine who's a surgical nurse and a senior surgical nurse in a level one trauma center.
Mm-hmm.
Right here in town, and is you know, one of those that's on demand. And we were talking about this thing about aspirin, and she said that you know, one of the biggest problems that they have among stroke victims is that they take aspirin on a daily basis, and it turns out it ain't all it's cracked up to be.
Vast majority of strokes aren't hemorrhagic, aren't bleeding into the brain. But, yeah, they're always, it's like that for anything, safety thing. If you wear a seatbelt, you always hear stories about people getting, you know, caught in their car with a seatbelt. For the vast majority of people, though, aspirin with heart disease is actually far safer than without.
Well, I mean, is a dosage level recommended? Because, I mean, you get some of the stuff what is the standard dosage? 80 mils?
Yeah, 81 milligrams baby aspirin to a full aspirin, adult aspirin, which is 325. That range would be acceptable.
So 80 is good.
80, at least 80 is good, yeah.
Now, would it be like the St. Joseph's Children's aspirin? Because I would think that if you're going to take an aspirin on a daily basis, you'd want to take the lowest dosage possible because it has a cumulative effect, doesn't it?
Actually, yeah, it does, and it's actually controversial. If you get 10 cardiologists in a room, you'll get 10 different answers.
Well, I need one answer right now,
Doc. The range is 81 to 325. One baby aspirin a day would be a perfect way to start. For some patients, they might actually need adult aspirin, but they'd have to check with their doctor.
But you'd say 80, a child's aspirin a day is okay, one chewable.
For adult men, usually. For adult men, it decreases the risk of heart disease. They did research on women and found it didn't really prevent heart disease. It might prevent stroke, however.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, men and women, as you probably know, are different.
Well, I've always known that, but, you know, as you know, that's politically incorrect to have that notion.
Well, medically speaking, it appears to be the case. And so if I tell your listeners tonight that aspirin might be help prevent heart attacks, that's true for men, not true for women. For women, it might be true to decrease their risk of stroke.
All right, hold the thought. Dr. Davis Liu with us. Stay healthy, live longer, spend wisely. Heart health and heart testing, some of the drugs, do they work? What does work? And we'll talk about some more about, like, exercise and, diet, which is critical. Fortunately, people are actually paying attention to nutrition nowadays. It wasn't always so, as you rather have guessed. 303-713-8585, the number 21 minutes after 1 o'clock. We continue on News Radio 850 KOA.
guy's in the car. Yes, this guy's in the car. I think the people.
Well, there's gas in the car. Somebody's got money. 72 degrees right now. And expect today to get up into the mid-90s again. Mostly sunny with a chance of late afternoon thundershowers. I always keep saying that. It's a lie. I don't believe it. Might see some Wednesday, though. That would be nice. Some rain. It'd be okay. I remember when there was a time that in the summer, you know, the monsoonal rains would hit every afternoon. I mean every afternoon. About any time after 3 o'clock to 3 to 4 o'clock, the monsoonal rains would come in and it would do their thing. And then it would clear out and the evening would be fresh and cool and wettish. Anyway, 72 degrees right now. Well, that's a good thing, I guess. 72 is tolerable. Steely Dan doing the music tonight. We continue back again with my guest, Dr. Davis Liu. Stay healthy, live longer, and spend wisely. Well, with the price of fuel and food these days, Doc, I don't know if we can spend it all. We were talking about you're talking about how the aspirin thing and so you recommend the lowest recommended daily allowance, which 81 degrees, which is child chewables, I think.
Yeah, baby aspirin, correct.
Yeah, which is actually, you know, that would, because it does have a cumulative effect. But you say with women it doesn't work, except it might have something to do to forestall stroke. Without getting into the strict medical explanations of the difference here, what's the difference here?
Nobody knows. I'd like to tell you I knew. No one knows. It's just the observation was that both men and women on aspirin, that men were protected from heart attacks or fatal heart attacks with aspirin, and women just didn't see much benefit. It's probably something to do with the hormones and genetics, and no one really knows for sure. So when my women patients ask me if they should take aspirin, I said, to prevent heart attack, probably not. If they're worried really about stroke, then probably that would be helpful.
Interesting. So is there an age group also? I mean, and because I recognize that there are so many factors that would play into this. For instance, obesity, high cholesterol, fat around the heart kind of thing. Where does one begin?
Well, there's a great link on my website at davisluemd.com. It's actually a heart calculator. It predicts your risk of having a heart attack over the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what you find, the major risk factors are the following. It's your age,
mm-hmm.
your gender,
mm-hmm.
smoking status,
mm-hmm.
your cholesterol,
mm-hmm.
your blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. So when patients come to me and say, Dr. Liu, I'm really worried about my cholesterol, the answer is it depends. If you're 65, for example, and a smoker, your cholesterol at that level, say it's high, might be much more worrisome than if you're 20.
Well, what about if you're 62, you're a smoker, but your cholesterol is obscenely low? In fact, they keep sending it back to the laboratory just to be sure they got it right.
Mm-hmm.
And you exercise every day. Your weight is right about 158. Then what?
Do you know your blood pressure?
Yeah, 80 over 120.
All right, we'll crank in. Let's find out. Give me a second. I'm actually online. So anyways, the biggest risk factor that you've described is basically going to be smoking.
Yeah, well, it's all relative. You know, you got to throw something in there to kind of have a sin.
I will tell you that out of all the fancy drugs we have,
yeah.
The aspirin, the fancy cholesterol medicines you see advertised on TV,
mm-hmm.
even the blood pressure medication, it's not clear if you're on blood pressure medication, but if you're not, everything is negated. Everything is just wiped clean by a cigarette. It doesn't matter what fancy stents we use. Doesn't matter what cholesterol medicine we use. Everything is wiped clean by that smoke and the cigarette.
Mm.
Now, funny enough, as you get older,
yeah.
Smoking becomes less of a risk factor.
Good.
Actually, age overtakes it. So when you get over to like 65 to 70, at that age, you're old enough to have clogged arteries. It doesn't matter smoking. But I'd still say smoking is not good. Period.
Yeah, no, of course it's not good. And I drink martinis too, Doc. So there.
As long as just one.
One what?
One martini.
Oh, I thought you meant one night. And what about a glass of wine once a day, by the way?
You never hear a doctor say that, but I think the research has shown one red glass.
One glass of red every night.
Yeah,
you
that
bet.
Would be fine.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it actually does help.
I think research is probably in your favor on that one.
Yeah, see, so you can kick that one in there as a plus. You know, just in case you want to counterbalance the cigarette thing.
Not sure there'll be enough.
I know. People like me are pariahs everywhere. Do you know that in the Netherlands this week, they've banned smoking in the coffee shops, but you can still smoke cannabis?
Is that right?
That is right. Jeez. Give me a break. Anyway, so what's the readout on that thing?
Still working on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll get back. Give me a second. Don't worry.
Okay.
A little early for me.
I can whistle Dixie, I guess.
62-year-old man. What's your cholesterol again?
It's grief. It's low, low.
We'll pick 200, let's say, or lower.
It's 180 something. Yeah.
Okay, let's win 180. Do you know what your good cholesterol was? Do you remember what that was?
No, I don't remember that.
I'll say 35 because that's what usually my men run in at. You currently smoke, what's your blood pressure, 120, did you say?
Yeah, 80 over 120.
Okay, great. And then are you taking any medicines for blood pressure right now?
No.
Great.
I exercise every day, too, and I play golf. I go around a lake. I live across a street from a lake that's exactly 1 mile around, and I do it at a really good clip.
Now, what's interesting, let me ask you quickly, did your parents ever have heart disease?
No.
Okay. So that tells us a lot, all right. Now, interestingly enough, when I told you about the study which predicts the risk of heart attack, they did this back in 1950, and they followed people from 1950 until they passed away, and then followed their children when they became adults, called the Framingham Heart Study, which takes place in Framingham, Massachusetts. So what's interesting, we said age, gender, cholesterol, smoking status, and blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I didn't say anything about obesity.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I said nothing about exercise.
Yeah, right. Well,
or family history.
Yeah.
Because what's funny is those things are kind of calculated into the cholesterol. By definition, if you're exercising a lot, your cholesterol should be lower. So that's kind of a proxy, if you will.
Yeah.
So exercise alone. Now let's crank you out real quick.
Okay.
Your risk is about 16%. Yeah. So that means if I cloned you 100 times tonight, that might be a scary thought, I guess, huh?
There is a scary thought. Yeah, you're right, exactly.
If I cloned you 100 times, 16 of you would have a heart attack or die of a heart attack in the next 10 years. What's that mean for you? Usually at a risk between 10 and 20%, we start telling people to take cholesterol medications or really seriously think about it.
Mm.
Now, if somehow you just got rid of those cigarettes, change it to no.
Yeah.
Your risk would fall to 11%.
Mm. Yeah,
instead of 16 people.
Well, I mean, 5 points on the percentile scale. I mean, how many clones are we going to have there? We're going to add 10 more clones.
Well, let me just tell you, under 10%, we say no cholesterol medication needed. Over 20%, cholesterol medication highly recommended. And then between 10 and 20, it's kind of a toss up to the patient and the doctor. But for the profile you just described, definitely an aspirin a day every day would be highly recommended.
Well, you know, like a Charles Chewable.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, okay. But you know, the first time they sent my cholesterol check out, because they hadn't been doing that, you know, they were doing everything else, and so mm-hmm. I decided to check my cholesterol after a certain age. They decided that it gets curious. And they had to send it back to the lab because it was so low.
They were shocked, were they?
Well, they said they can't be right. And so they sent it back again and said, no, that's right.
Well, let me just change your cholesterol, just even though it's not your case. Let's change it to, like, 240, which I see most of my men at, and keep everything else the same for you.
Well, it's not in the twos. I know that.
I know, but just for the sake of the discussion with your audience here,
oh, yeah, okay.
Your risk would be 20% now.
That
would be a cholesterol medication. And I think the reason your cholesterol is so low, frankly, is because of your genetics. You said no one in your family's ever had heart disease.
Yeah, that's right.
So even though you're a smoker, they shouldn't just look at you and go, you're at risk for heart disease. It's all the things we talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
if somehow we made you a woman, your risk would drop quite a bit, but I won't go there.
That's a good thing. I know a few people who would be very disturbed if you had. But generally speaking, so the average guy, okay, now, assuming that men, do they have a higher risk than women? Or is that not necessary? Because you say it takes both sides of them, obviously. But, I mean, how do you look at that when you look at this?
Great question. Yeah, great question. So the heart calculator, as I said online, and what happens is if we did change into woman, I just did that just for the sake of this argument,
mm-hmm.
the risk went down from 16 to 5%.
Okay.
So why is that? You know, that's all I changed. You're still a smoker, and we take your cholesterol at 180. It's because women have estrogen. And so it's thought of, it's very protective until they go through menopause. So, for example, a man's risk is at age 45, that's when we start thinking about heart disease
mm-hmm.
as a risk factor. And for women, it's age 55. And the 10-year gap is because they're having their periods until about age 51. At that point, their estrogen levels have fallen, and now the protective effects have disappeared, and now their risk becomes more like a man. That's why there's a 10-year gap. So
I see.
If we change you to 62 female just now, your risk went from 16% to 5.
Mm. Okay.
Being a smoker, I might add, too. So.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I'm switching over to a pipe, by the way.
Okay, well, that might be better.
Yeah, the cigarettes were starting to. I got to cut back on these cigarettes, so I started to smoke a pipe. So that helps a little.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it tastes better.
It's a hard habit to quit.
Well, yeah, this was the argument I had with myself. Do I really want to quit smoking? No, I don't. Do I like smoking? Yes, I do. Okay, can you change something? Yeah, I can. So I did. That's what I did. And I know people say, well, you shouldn't smoke. There's a lot of things I shouldn't do, but I do. I mean, yeah. But nevertheless, I have to use some kind of a balancing mathematics there somewhere. You still there?
Oh, I'm still here.
Absolutely. Oh, I thought I was having that discussion by myself there
Not
for a moment.
Not at all. No, I'm just listening.
What are you doing? I'm writing this down. Compulsive writing down stuff. So what about the drugs that are on market? You mentioned that early on. You know, I mean, I cannot watch television, especially newscasts in the evening. And I don't know if you ever watch evening news. I do. I'm a news junkie. But that's when they load the air with these drug ads. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it actually is kind of scary. In fact, I think all the drug ads are pretty much during the evening news from what I've seen as well.
Yeah, it's bad enough I have to watch the news when the world's flying apart, but then I got a drug that says, and by the way, might call it cause internal bleeding, blindness, or death. Take this. Ask your doctor if it's good for you. Oh, great.
The answer to your question is it may not be surprising to you, but maybe to the people in the audience there, that pharmaceutical companies spend most of their money on marketing, actually, much more so. For example, Vioxx, that pain medication that was recalled a few years ago.
Yeah, because it killed people.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Actually, heart attacks, funny enough.
Yeah, funny.
They spent more money, Merck did, than Budweiser spent for beer, and Pepsi did promoting Pepsi, so... That's how much money they spent in 2000.
I always wondered if they spent that kind of money in R&D, that they wouldn't have the problems they have. You know, that if they spent the billions, and I know it's a multi-billion dollar industry of advertising this stuff. If they spent that money, or even half of it, into R&D.
Well, I think the challenge for them is they actually do spend a lot of money, probably even more so in R&D. But the problem is, once you find a new product or element, if you will, or chemical, you have a 17-year window for those patents.
Mm.
Of course, when you find a new chemical, it doesn't mean it's safe in humans. You've got to actually distill it. You've got to do what's called clinical trials, phase 1, phase 2, and phase 3. Basically, number 1, it says it doesn't kill people. Number 2, it says it actually might work. And number 3, it says let's actually make sure it works. So by the time they go through all these clinical trials, they probably have a 5-year window to actually market the stuff, and that's why they market the heck out of it for those 5 years. And then once it goes generic, then you never see those ads again. I mean, does anyone remember the purple pill anymore? Doesn't seem to be on TV anymore. Mm. That went generic. It went over the counter. So.
Yeah, they don't like that, do they?
No, they don't. But I think it brings up an interesting point when I talk about my books, Stay Healthy, Live Longer, Spend Wisely. If you see something that's being spent a lot of money in marketing, kind of like when Coke does Pepsi and vice versa,
you've
got to ask yourself, is there something really different about it, or is it just a Me Too drug? And frankly, most of the drugs that you see on TV are all Me Too drugs. I mean, there's plenty of excellent generic drugs that used to be brand drugs a few years ago, and they work just as well. So for like heart disease, our discussion tonight, Zocor, which was on TV a few years ago, which is now generic, is an excellent cholesterol medication. Been shown for years to decrease risk of heart attack and actually stroke for some patients as well. And you won't see that advertised on TV anymore because there's no money to be made. It's generic. But you will see Lipitor and Crestor, which Crestor, the newest one, has not been proven. In fact, watch this next time you will see the ads when you watch the news. Crestor is a cholesterol medication. It'll say in little print in the ad, not shown to prevent heart attacks. You might ask yourself, well, why would I take this? But that's exactly right, because they've never proven it. Why is that? It might be a little unethical to put people on sugar pills and this new pill if other pills like Zocor, which have been around, have been shown to work. Why would someone in their right mind try a candy pill versus this new pill, 50-50 chance, versus there's one out there? So You'll see the newer drugs won't have that warning, and Crestor Guarantee won't have one, even if you look at the magazine ads. They'll say, not proven to decrease risk of heart attack. The first question says, well, why am I taking it then? I don't want to just lower my number. It has to do something.
Well, that would be a reasonable question, too. But the of course, the drug companies, the one thing they don't want you to know is that or something like that. And, I mean, I have a thing about drug companies, Big Pharma. I think one of the world's biggest rip-off engines of all time. And I realized that, you know, they said, well, it's not fair. No, it's not fair because they do make, I mean, a lot of these drugs really do, after all, do the things they're supposed to do.
Absolutely, and I think it's changed. I mean, remember that direct-to-consumer advertising didn't start till 1997 or so. So before, 10 years ago, we didn't even see these things. We'd have to actually talk to our doctor and see and what they recommend.
Yeah.
I'd also say that actually what's interesting, which I cover in the book as well, is that doctors are marketed heavily by drug reps. I don't know if you ever see a drug rep in your doctor's office.
Oh, I have, and that's why they get these free samples.
Yeah, but again, when I cover my book in the Stay Healthy, Live Longer, Spend Wisely, the issue is, if you see an ad on TV, I understand, you're going to come in and ask your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
The question you should ask your doctor is, hey, doc, I saw this ad for, let's say, Crestor, for the sake of the argument.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily want to take that pill. I want to know what I need to do about my cholesterol. Because what doctors will knee-jerk is, one, think you want the pill you say.
Yeah, well, that's what they're trained to do nowadays.
And number two, yeah, unfortunately. And number two, 3/4 of the marketing budget, which I talk about, is spent on doctors, not on the TV ads. So believe it or not, even though you and I, as someone watching TV, might get really interested in a pill, the doctors actually get spent a lot more being taken out to dinner.
Sent on a golf vacation to Honolulu.
So when your doc tries to send you free samples, say, doc, just ask him, do I really need this brand? Why this brand? Has it been proven to work or not?
What about, can you ask for a generic and say, well, is there a generic?
You should definitely ask for a generic. Say, hey, doc, is this new drug proven, or is it just a Me Too drug? Is there something proven that's cheaper? Because a lot of proven stuff is cheaper. And frankly, docs have no incentive to give you the cheaper stuff because they've been wooed and dined by drug reps.
Yeah, I tell you, sounds like being inside the Beltway, doesn't it? Anyway. Hold on, Doc. We're going to take a quick break here. 303-713-8585, the number. And again, talking about stay healthy, live longer, spend wisely. Heart health. When we come back, we'll talk about that spending thing. You know, generics is one part of it. But then there's this thing about, is there means by which you can look at your insurance to take care of some of that. 303-713-8585, the number. You're listening to News Radio 850, KOA. Make it 147 as we continue. And Steely Dan doing the honors tonight. And Josie gets home. 303-713-8585, the number. We continue with my guest, Dr. Davis Liu, talking about heart health. And we got some folks on the line, Doc. Let's go to the telephone and see what we got here. In West Texas is West Texas.
Good morning.
Hey, there you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, rhyme with the doc.
Don't know where to start. Your name, doctor.
Lou.
It is Lou, L-O-U?
L-I-U.
L-I-U, okay, got it. What about sleep?
Sleep?
Sleep, is that an important thing to do for your health? Get your 8 hours, and if you don't, you'll turn into a pumpkin.
Good question. Yes, sleep is very important. 8 hours, it depends. Some of us can get by with six. Some can need a good 7 to 8 hours, 9 hours. What's most important is that you feel refreshed when you finish sleeping and not to try to sell yourself short. We seem to wear as red badge of courage in this country that, you know, we can get by with little and little sleep. And, in fact, there's a lot of research that shows our memory gets impaired, our stress levels go up. One study showed actually people who work night shift, for example, they seem to be at higher risk for cancer. I don't understand why.
Already.
I don't mean to speak this to the three of us who happen to be up at this hour right now. But for some reason, it seems to be increased risk. So sleep is very important, but don't get hung up on the eight-hour thing. Each person is a little bit different. And as we get older, you'll find that our sleep number of hours of sleep we need actually is a little bit less.
Let's suppose that we have a 74-year-old gentleman who finds that he wakes up after 4 hours sleep every night.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of thrashing around and trying to get back to sleep, counting sheep and all of that stuff, he gets up.
Mm-hmm.
And he eats breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And his breakfast is very healthy. And then he goes back to bed. And if he's lucky, he gets back to sleep and catches another couple of 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Is that bad? Or is that a livable lifestyle?
Do you nap during the day as well?
No, I work during the day.
I see, okay. Let me ask you one other question. Between the two sleep cycles there, how much time has elapsed? About half an hour, 45 minutes?
Let's be honest, it may tend to an hour, and if he starts calling radio stations, it might get even longer.
So there's a couple things. Has this been a new pattern, or is that something you've had for years?
I think the present company can testify it's been there for years.
Yeah, years.
Okay. But before that, it was never a problem, correct?
Before what?
Before we started calling, staying up late and calling radio shows.
I don't remember that far.
I don't either.
Anyways, the bottom line is that it's probably not a bad thing. What we have is we have sleep cycles, and what's happening is that you're waking up after your fourth hour, and instead of going back down to sleep to link the two sleep patterns together, you're not. And so you can try to link them back together. Some people have some sleep classes they can attend. But if it works well for you for many, many years and you don't feel any adverse effects, I don't see a problem with that.
Well, I'll get a good obituary on the radio station, for sure.
You're well indeed, Wes.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Mike.
All right. He's one of my regular guys. 303-713-8585, the number. And let's continue on. Let's see. Let's go to, all right, on there on a cell phone is Rick. Rick, you're on with my guest, Dr. Davis Lou. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you.
Hi.
Hey, I had a question to the doctor there about this children's aspirin. I have sclerosis of the liver now. If I took one of those a day, is there going to cause more damage?
Cirrhosis, would that cause more damage?
Well, you know, it won't cause damage to your liver, but since the liver is responsible for blood clotting, you probably should check with your doctor before you start taking aspirin. Because, again, it depends on an individual circumstance. Although in this country, heart disease is the number one killer, for this listener, obviously cirrhosis of the liver might be a little bit higher priority. So I would check with your doctor before starting aspirin because, as he's alluding to, the liver is very important for stopping bleeding. And if you compound that with aspirin, that could make something which was controllable and easy to deal with much more serious.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the answer there.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much. 303-713-8585, the number. Somebody had called in earlier on a cell phone saying it had some problems with Crestor. I don't know exactly what the problems were. Crestor is heavily marketed right now, but you say it doesn't say anything about being prevent heart attacks or heart disease. Is that true?
Yeah, it's got the disclaimer actually that says it's not been proven to prevent heart attacks.
What's it supposed to do?
Lowers cholesterol.
Does it?
Yes, it does.
Uh-huh.
It does it very well. The problem is cholesterol is not the end point you're looking for. The end point you're looking for is to prevent heart attack. So let me get you. I'm on their website right now at Crestor.com,
mm-hmm.
and it says right here in pretty clear language at the bottom here, Crestor has not been determined to prevent heart disease, heart attacks, or strokes. So,
Yeah, and again, the question is, why would you take it? Yeah, right, exactly. When we come back, I want to ask about necessary versus unnecessary heart surgery, because you hear people say, well, you know, just to be safe, we want to do a quadruple on you. So hold on a sec, Doc, if you would, please. 303-713-8585, the number. Dr. Davis Liu with us. Stay healthy, live longer, spend wisely. Heart health on News Radio 850 KOA. We continue heading on to the top of the hour, of course, some news. Back again with my guest, Dr. Davis Liu, heart health, stay healthy, live longer, spend wisely. What about one of the things that I've heard? Now, I cannot give, this is anecdotal, obviously. This is one of those stories where you heard about somewhere. But it is anecdotal to the point where these stories seem legitimate enough. Where someone will go in and the surgeon will say, well, you know, just to be safe, and you've heard this one. You know, this is sort of like, you know, a guy walks into a bar. Doc says, just to be safe, we're going to do a double bypass or a triple bypass or a bypass or a quadruple bypass, or, you know, we're going to end up putting you on the altar and sacrifice you to, you know, Kukulkan. What do you say to that?
Be darn sure before you let them open your chest. Second opinion with somebody else. You get a second opinion with another cardiologist before they do that. You know, years ago, before we had those fancy heart stents, we only had two choices, right? Medication, what we talked about already, aspirin, blood pressure medication, cholesterol, or open up your chest. It was pretty obvious. Unless you had crushing chest pain, that medication didn't help. You'd say, you know what, doc, open up my chest. With stents, though, we've actually don't need to do as many open-heart surgeries because the stents open up without opening up your chest. And so, you know, there might be an alternative therapy, so be darn sure. The research is sketchy on this. You know, they used to think that stents were better than medication. In a landmark study last year, they found that that wasn't the case, except for a small group of people who benefited for the most part. All the boring, unsexy stuff we've been talking about, aspirin, control blood pressure, control your cholesterol, all these basic things actually do save lives. It's just that as a country, we don't like the boring, unsexy stuff. We like the latest, greatest, newest technology. And so if you have that situation, be sure to get a second opinion before someone starts cracking open your chest. I always recommend getting a second opinion. I talk about this in my book. Again, you know, we get second opinions all the time in our life, even if we don't want it. Like, they'll comment on our spouses, our girlfriends, boyfriends, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And so when it comes to your health, why would you not get a second opinion? Doctors that demand second opinions all the time when they're patients. So you should ask everyone, especially when it's something critical and serious as a major surgery.
All right. Your book is available as we speak?
Yes, on my website at davisluemd.com, also at amazon.com as well.
And it's called Stay Healthy, Live Longer, Spend Wisely. And, Doc, thank you so much indeed, and good luck with your work.
Thank you very much for having me.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And, again, Davis, that's not David, Davis Liu, L-I-U, L-I-U. We're going to take a break to the news. We continue on News Radio 850 KOA.